Justin, it finally happened.
There's a lot of follow-ups here that I could go with, but...
There are a lot of sort of like, now you've made it moments as a games journalist.
Okay.
I think we've talked about this before, about how, actually Last of Us related, the first time when you get like ratioed, are you familiar with this as a concept? The first time you get ratioed in a negative way, it's kind of like a moment of like, hey, like, this happens to everyone, and it means you're doing something right. Because it just means, like, this is just going to happen to you eventually, you know? And, like, it feels really shitty when that happens, because, like, you just, hey, that sucks. You know what I mean? Like it's never fun to be, like, to get a bunch of hate online. But it is kind of like one of those, like, hey, this is a part of the job, you know? And by doing this, like, it's bound to happen eventually. You're a games journalist. Congratulations. Well, I have reached the second stage.
After being ratioed, it is fractionized.
It's a screenshot posted by a fucking conservative grifter.
Oh, it happened. Congrats. Did
thank
you. Wow. Who did it?
The fucking kingpin.
Elon Musk.
Conservative grifter. Elon Musk. No. Mark Kern. I'm not going to call him Grumps. I think I'm talking about a fucking 60-year-old man. I'm not going to call him by his little screen name. He tweets a lot, so you're going to have to do some scrolling. This was on the 19th, so on Friday.
How did you know I was doing this?
Because I'm seeing your face. He tweets out this, in quotes. Before you look, what do you think he found of mine that he is tweeting about?
I think he's probably tweeting about your take on underpants.
Oh, see, that's such a wonderful thing, right?
He's like, I don't wear underpants.
I've been counting down the seconds until I get like a reaction streamer watching my fucking Wolfenstein video.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? And just like sending like hate my way for being what I would say staunchly anti-fascist.
But to be fair, so far, haven't you only been given like positive
good stuff from Xander Hall?
Yeah, right. Like that's pretty cool.
He was
cool.
So nice about it.
Yeah.
I thought when he was doing that he would, I didn't know who he was. And when I saw that I was being streamed by him, I was like, fuck, like, this is, I'm not excited for this. But then he was so nice about it. No, Justin, he tweets my headline in quotation marks, Marathon already has something Concord didn't. And then follows that up by saying, the gamer journalism shills are working overtime to defend Marathon and Dragon Age this morning. And so he tweeted a screenshot of my article and then a screenshot of my friend Rhiannon, her article titled, DLC wouldn't have fixed Dragon Age the Veilguard, but it deserved some anyway. And the reason I found out about this, I have him blocked because I have no interest in seeing his tweets or having people quote tweet him to dunk on him because I just don't fuck with that. But Rhiannon tweeted a screenshot of his tweet saying, I wonder why he only cropped out the text in my article, because it starts by saying, let's get this out of the way quickly. I do not think Dragon Age the Veilguard is a particularly good game. I think that's its moments, the siege of blah, 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 blah. Obviously just to say like, yeah, you cropped that because you don't want people to see that, like, I'm not being shitty about this, right? Or like that, like, I agree it's not a very good game, you know? So my article, Marathon already has something Concord didn't, is a part of the grift. I made it.
So can you tell me a little bit about, can you summarize the article and then, you know, let people go to that article, get the clicks?
Absolutely. Because by the way, I would just like to share like how big this anti-woke grifter movement is. My article has 54 views.
Hell so, like, yeah. That's how many... Still?
Yes. So nobody is looking at this. Do you know what I mean? Like, nobody fucking cares about this is what I'm saying. Like, it just makes me feel really good that, like, okay, no one fucking looked at this because there's not that many people who actually care about this, right? So my article, the point I make is actually a point I made on our podcast, which is like, hey, politely, not to speak ill of the dead, who the fuck was Firewalk Studios? They made Concord, but like, why would anyone give them money for a game that looked kind of meh and like was just kind of bland, right? Versus Marathon is a game by Bungie. And whether or not you looked at that footage and were like, wow, this is great, or didn't, at the end of the day, you still have to recognize, like, Bungie has a pedigree of being one of the most successful studios of all time. And if you don't like what the footage looked like, that's fine. You're welcome to that opinion, and you don't have to buy the game. But to say that Marathon and Concord are on the same exact boat is foolish.
I also want to say, yeah, a lot of the comments in general are not like 100% supportive of the posts and stuff like that, like, which is great.
Yeah, going down, I mean, I really appreciate this guy who says, he took a screenshot of my article and says, this guy who specializes cause of his newfound love for Souls-like games is covering Marathon instead of Lords of the Fallen, which has become this whole, like, culture war thing. By the way, 2/3 of his arguments for Marathon align with the same problems that people have with Concord, and would be 3 out of 3 if we add Firewalk, if we add Firewalk had Bungie devs. He's not a particularly well-spoken person, this commenter. And yeah, there are some people saying, like, I read the article and, like, it's some pretty good points, which I appreciate. I also appreciate this guy who tweeted a screenshot of one of my videos that, let's see, where did this go? Do you even take this guy serious? So love the conjugation of serious there. And it's titled Red Dead Redemption 2 is mid, fight me. And that is a video where someone commented that, and I am reacting to their comment, and I've never really played it. So I'm like, I don't know if it's like, sometimes popular things are popular because they are good. That's my take on Red Dead Redemption 2.
Whoa.
That they would know if they
crazy.
Watched the video.
That's crazy.
Or if they read the text on the screen and the screenshot that they had, which the subhead is, they're telling me Red Dead Redemption 2 is overrated, which is, you know, what the video is about. Meh. There you go.
There was this comment, Marathon certainly does have something Concord didn't, a fan base to disappoint. While the snarky nature of that with a fan base to disappoint is, like, there, isn't that kind of the thing?
They do. Yeah, it. No, that's 100%.
They're
a Bungie fans.
A fan base. You know why Nintendo games get a Nintendo bump? Because there's this thing in the world. Have you heard of them? Nintendo fans.
Nintendo, yes.
So...
Reliable tweeter Adolf Rizzler says, does Marathon look promising? Bungie's pretty reliable for good gameplay. No. So thank you, Adolf Rizzler. I'm glad that you are allowed to tweet, on social media with that as your username. But also you're making the point that I'm making. So thank you. I suppose.
Like, I love when people make an argument thinking they're dunking on you, but they're just reaffirming what you said.
Also, this person, this is like a big grifter guy, Yorch Torch. I've seen his profile. It says it has more wokeness than Concord, so yes. Which, I mean, like, what is woke, right? Like, who cares? But also, like, I would say, like, objectively, it does not. It's like a bunch of, like, guys in, like, robot suits.
I don't
you know what I mean. Like,
I don't know how you,
like, faceless robots.
I don't know how you do it. Like, when a student challenges, like, a supplemental text that we're reading or something like that, or a grade I gave them. Like,
yeah,
I cannot rest until I've, like, proven myself correct.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so many comments on the internet. How do you do it? Because.
I will say it is something that it takes a long time to get used to. Because when I first started writing, I read every single comment. I mean, I still read a lot of comments, right? But I read a lot of comments and it really, really bothered me. But I took some advice from one Jeff Gerstmann, personal friend of mine. I'm kidding.
He does have your phone number. You have his phone number.
That's Jeff Grubb, Justin. Jeff Gerstmann, also on Giant Bomb for a time. He something along the... This was when the Giant Bomb East was sort of dissolving. And they kind of, like, all, like, Vinny and everyone kind of came on and said, like, hey, this is our last episode. They were just talking about, like, getting started and whatever, and they said something along... Jeff Gerstmann said something along the lines of, like, don't ever read the comments. But if you do, don't ever respond. And I was like, that's a really, really good sort of mentality for this job, because so many people are just shitty, right? And taking you at bad faith and bad, you know, like, they're just, like, giving you bad faith criticisms and stuff. It's like, you didn't read it. And so something that I learned when I was working at Digital Trends was the gaming section lead, Gio, he told me, like, every single time you write something, you need to also write the counterpoint of it, because you have to think about what they're going to say in the comments, and just, you do not have to respond, because they're going to just be like, well, what about this? And the response is always just like, I addressed that in the article. And so you don't need to respond, because it's like, well, if you read it, you wouldn't, like, you would understand that I'm, that this does not need addressing, because I did address that. And so that has shaped a lot of my writing. So
I have to admit, I feel like when I'm grading a student's essay, I'm like the YouTube commenter.
Oh, certainly. Their essay.
And then when they read my comments, they get infuriated by it, when I'm just being like, this is what I'm seeing. I do think this is like a side comment with this. I sometimes wish students could record myself grading someone's essay verbally before I type the polite things on their rubric.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I do. That would be informative, I think, for everyone.
Yeah,
and I probably wouldn't have a job, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, is I'm a similar way, right? Where I'm like, hey, you colossal dipshit. You know what I mean? Like, let's talk about that, fucker. You know, but I'm not going to meet those people with that attitude, because like, I just don't take these people seriously. Right. And here's the thing. These are, you have to take these people seriously, because they have, it sucks to say they matter, but they do matter for culture. Right. Because there are so many people having these conversations. That's why for me, it's, you can't just sweep the conversation under the rug. Right. When these guys were talking about Assassin's Creed Shadows being woke and whatever, cause there's a black dude in it. Like, to me, it's important that you have to have those conversations, because those conversations are happening, even though I don't think they need to be addressed, because it's like, hey, it's not, because it just, like, just a black guy being in it, this is fine. It doesn't even need to be like, everyone's like, well, it is historically accurate. It's like, it doesn't even need to be that. I don't actually care. Like, whatever. But like, to me, I'm never going to reach this man. I'm never going to change his mind, because he probably knows that he's being a dipshit. I mean, like, why do you think you're popular online? It's not because you're popular in real life, Mark. Do you know, like, everyone thinks you're a weirdo loser, Mark. You know what I mean? Like, I have real friends and family to talk to, Mark.
I really hope there's a listener named Mark who is, just feels really targeted.
Yeah, you,
right now.
Mark. No. Not if you listen to Hitbox, you're a gem. Unless, of course, you're Mark Kern, in which case, stop listening to Hitbox. Go try and fucking rebuild a relationship with your children, motherfucker. Anyway, it's Hitbox. Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 239. I didn't mean for it to get heavy there, Justin, but like, I genuinely mean, like, I was like kind of ecstatic this morning when I was like, oh fuck, I'm a part of the grift. I got used as part of the grift. And it's not because, like I said, I thought people were going to discover like the video.
What's
you know,
what's step three?
I think step three is to
be on Fox News,
like, to have Asmongold react to my video, in which case I will be unhappy. That will not be a fun day.
Oh, but I think, you know what I mean? Step three should be, before that happens, you go on Fox News to like defend a point very rationally, and then have a bunch of old men yell at you.
Do you remember when that used to be Jeff Keighley's job?
Yeah.
He went on Fox News to talk about Mass Effect.
Yeah.
And it, like, back when he was like a journalist and stuff, and it's like, oh man, I'm like, Jeff Keighley, like, you have some good points here. You know, and he's just like talking with these like women who like never play the game, like no fucking interest. They're just
so
like,
they're
trying
blue
to talk
and
about,
they
like,
don't have genitalia.
They're like these like graphic sex scenes, and he's like, well, it's actually like not just something that you just like, first of all, not graphic sex, he likes the side of an alien butt. Like, whatever.
We don't know what side though of their butt.
That's true. Could be the
The bottom side?
Top. Yeah, I don't know. Justin, my name is Peter Ed Spitzek. Joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin, you've reached 100 hot dogs in the year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
It's a milestone for sure. Today I put some onions on them. I do want to like follow up with the fact that we hung out in person
on Friday.
We had a game night. And I think everyone around us was shocked, but not upset with the fact that a major topic of conversation throughout the evening was hot dogs.
It kept coming back up. It was like maybe two or three times that we did discuss it. And it was like to the point where we were like, all right, we got to start heading out because it was starting to rain like really hard. And it was like, well, we should talk about hot dogs for at least 20 more minutes.
We got to talk about some secret hot dogs right now. But like, and at no point was it like forced.
No, it wasn't. And it wasn't to be funny. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? Like, we're not like,
they were like true conversations.
Yeah. Cause hey man, like they're, you know, it's interesting. I'm at 53. I'm slacking a little bit. Didn't have any today. Atlanta took me out for lunch. Cause I had a day apart from the grifter stuff. I'm just like tired.
I do have to say that like, oh, you said only, that's a great number for when you started this.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I do have to say, the Kane County Cougars, I'm going to opening day. It's Thirsty Thursday, which, whatever. It's a school night. I'm not going crazy. And half-price dogs, so they'll still probably be like $3, $4. But, like, I'm going. And
are you doing nine? Are you going alone?
No, I'm going.
Just you and Claire?
No, Sean.
Oh, okay.
So I think I will be in a place where I will be encouraged to eat nine dogs.
Here's the thing. Do nine. You and Sean, I think you'll have a good time with that. If you do nine, report back. I mean, obviously you'll report back, but report back and let me know how you feel about it.
Yeah.
And then we can test the water. Like maybe you're testing the waters there for, I think we could do 18.
I think
we could do a dog in every top of the inning.
The barrier to that is if it's only on dollar dog night. We got to go to a dollar dog night. I'm not doing that.
Yes, I'm not spending $100 to do
even
this.
Even half-priced dogs, I might need to take out a second mortgage in order to do this. But
correct.
I got to try it, and I got to be there in the moment. Did you buy multiple dogs at once, or was it just like one every time, and then you went back? Do they know you by
name? I was doing two at once at first, and then I had to buy four because we left at the fifth inning,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
And so it's like I had to. And so the guy, yes, they did ask, like, "Are you doing the?" I was like, "Yeah."
And they're like, "Do you want a beer or drink?" And you're like, "No, just I'm."
Well, I did buy a drink. Raw
dogging it.
Nice.
But once though, you didn't buy nine. Can you imagine?
I was refilling it, but we didn't. I was like, certainly not. We did the math, I think, before we went about how much. Like fluid, it is like it's like 2-3 liters. Like
that's
no
heavy
fucking chance
that
happening.
Heavy.
Yes,
that's a lot.
Yes, and for with Diet Coke, no thanks. Justin, can I give you a quick preview of what's coming up?
Let's go.
Justin, the Switch pre-orders are finally happening. They're happening later this week. We have confirmation of how much the Switch 2 is going to cost, with all of the tariffs and all of that. Mario Kart had a direct that showed off a little bit more of what that game is going to be like. I think I'm certainly interested to hear your thoughts on it. Someone who's played, I would say, significantly more Mario Kart than I have. And finally, the Oblivion remaster that's sort of been leaked and rumored and all of that is finally coming our way tomorrow. We're going to talk about all of that and more. But before we do, Justin, I would like to tell our listeners they can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer, a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Knoll, GKS, and Josh Durham. To get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Today, we're actually talking about a little bit more about like content creation and stuff. Another one of my videos did pretty well, and I think we're going to break down some of the things about it. Some of my thoughts on it, because I think I don't know if I said this on the podcast or not. I did not think the video was particularly good, and it was just one of those things where I was like, I got to just get this out. But then now we're at 70K, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to be interested to hear some of your thoughts on that as well, as someone who's watched it and didn't make the video. Justin, our listeners can also join us on Discord. The link to that is in the description of this episode. But also, we're off Twitter. We're gone. Hitbox Pod Blue Sky. I created an account.
No.
I'll be honest, I have not tweeted from it yet. The proper verb is skeeted, but
no.
I don't want to say that.
You got to skeet.
That's what it's called.
You got to skeet it.
I don't like that.
Oh,
to say.
Oh, did you see? I have a new video to skeet. I did.
Ugh. Tonight I will post that video from the Blue Sky account.
Okay, cool.
As
cool.
Our first,
you can skeet that.
As our flagship voyage. Yes,
flagship skeet. One skeet. Yep. One sky.
Yeah, aren't the what's that? Isn't there a Dr. Seuss book about skeet? Sneeches. That's what it is.
Skeet, skeet, Dr. Seuss book. there is one of the worst sushi rolls at Sushi City is called Blue Sky.
Oh, it's terrible.
It is.
It's very bad.
Like, inedible.
It's got blue mayo.
Like,
on it.
I would eat
gross.
Anything. I would literally eat anything, like, specifically at, like, a place like that. And there's, in Sushi City, everyone, if you're in the area, Sushi City, it's in, was that Woodridge? Woodridge,
it's at the
Downers
Four Corners
Grove, Darien's. Mall is a very generous term.
It's what I guess like the death knell, like the death rattle of a strip mall.
Yeah, it's surviving somehow.
Which is insane because it's like tucked away.
Yeah.
Next to a vacant Toys R Us, a vacant like Home Goods, Ulta Beauty, and Ultra Foods.
Yeah. But it's like what, $29 for all you can eat sushi?
It's whatever the standard price is, which is far too much, but it's my favorite in Illinois that I've had.
Yeah, it's not a buffet, but they'll like make the rolls for you as much as you want. Yeah, and the rolls are like above average. They're like a 6 on average, I think, out of a possible 10 for sushi, which ain't bad.
I would give them a 7. I would give them a 7.
Oh.
I like Sushi City quite a bit.
Okay, okay. I got to take you
some Gin 28
better
in
sushi
downtown
places.
Naperville as well.
Yeah.
Better, what's that?
Better sushi places.
Here's the problem is like, I just like the deal. It's a good deal.
I can't eat. I can't get full off of sushi for less than $60 at most places.
Right. Yes. And so I was like, listen, if it's pretty good, I'm good for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can follow us on Blue Sky. I guess I don't understand like how the at works. Cause it's like a whole fucking link. But if you search up Hitbox Pod on Blue Sky, that is where we reside now. We're off Twitter. Goodbye, Twitter. If you remember earlier in the episode, there was a guy named Adolf Rizzler on Twitter, and he's allowed to just post. So we're off that fucking website. Good fucking riddance. Took us a while, but also like we weren't active on Twitter. You know what I mean? Blue Sky all the way. That's what's up. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Oh,
there's nothing in the Metacritic roundup this week, except you might notice that this episode did not go up at our usual time. This episode, I believe, went up a little bit later or perhaps a little bit earlier because, Justin, I've been playing Clair Obscur Expedition 33, the turn-based RPG that was shown off at last year's Xbox showcase for Summer Game Fest that everyone was kind of like, what is this? This looks kind of generic and dumb. And then it was like, oh, it's a turn-based RPG. This looks actually kind of fucking sick. Starring Mr. Charlie Cox, starring Mr. Ben Starr, Andy Serkis, as well as Jennifer English, voice of, I believe, Shadowheart in Baldur's Gate 3, among other, Deborah Wilde as well, among other characters. I've played about 4 to 5 hours of this game, Justin. And let me just tell you this right now. We obviously don't have Metacritic score for it because we're talking about it pre-release. This game's great. I'm really, really digging what this game is doing.
All right. Hard to give like a definitive answer about an RPG in the first 4 to 5 hours because they do tend to evolve in those first like 15. But tell me what the basic plot is and then what is the basic gameplay mechanic?
Okay. So the plot is... You play as this guy named Gustav, voiced by Charlie Cox, and you're in this city called, I think, like Lumina or like Luminos or something like that. No, not Lumia. That's a Pokemon city. You are in. It's all very French inspired, and I kind of love it. It's like it's like hitting like the same like Lies of P French inspired sort of like gothic vibes. You live in this city and in this world where basically, like 70 years ago, this giantess woman appeared way out in the middle of the ocean next to this giant tree, and they call her the Paintress. And every single year, the Paintress paints a number on the tree, and that number, starting at 100, counting down to zero, every single time she paints that number, the people whose age that is have 1 year left to live before they get snapped out of existence Thanos style. And so the game opens on, it's called the Grimage, the day that the people get snapped out of existence for people who are 34 years old. And your character, Gustav, is 33. And so all the people who are 34 years old get snapped out of existence. And then Expedition 33, the 33rd, the expedition of people who are 33, who are going to spend their final year trying to go kill the Paintress to stop her from continuing to do that, departs the day after the Grimage. And so that is the premise. You go, you travel to this unknown place. It's called the Continent, in an attempt to kill the Paintress. Kind of weird. It's very simply explained. Like when the game starts, it's a weird concept, but it makes sense as it's told.
So clarifying questions, if you can answer them. No Please. One over the age of 33 is living.
So may I spoil the first, I'm going to say 45 minutes of this game.
I am okay with it.
When you get to the Continent, things go really fucking bad right away with your expedition. That's the other thing is like they've been sending expeditions since the Paintress started painting.
Can you imagine that 99 expedition, like them? They're, oh, you got this.
But that's the thing. From what it sounds like, it seems like it's all like people who are like interested in like trying to stop it. You know what I mean? So I think they're probably all younger. But then also, so basically you get to the Continent and you see an old man and they all recount like, you're old. Like, how are you alive? And then shit gets really, really bad. So we are going to follow up on who that guy, I've not gotten responses to who that guy is or whatever, but yes, there are no older people because they have just been eliminated year by year by year. It does not address, at least so far, the idea that like, if the Paintress destroys everyone who's 34 and you're 33, and then the next day you have a birthday, now you're 34. It's not that specific. Wait, about birthday, how that
I thought
all
everyone
works.
On June 10th turns a year older.
Oh shit. We haven't told Justin that that's not how it works yet. Okay.
Wait, what? Next you're going to tell me there's no Santa Claus.
Yes, there is some intrigue about like older people have kind of disappeared, but they do see an older person. And it's this big question about like, who is this guy and where does he come from and how has he survived and all that sort of stuff. So that's like the premise. And you are exploring the Continent, trying to find the Paintress and trying to kill her. It's like the setting on the Continent and in the city as well is very like, it's very like Xenoblade, where like sort of like impossible rock structures are like floating in the air. And there's like these like glowing trees and stuff like that. It's a very, very like visually striking game. I really, really like how it looks. I'll say this. The presentation is a little rough at times. I find two things. Thing one is you're going to want to, when you start up this game, go ahead and put that on performance mode, because that is a rough 30. It doesn't matter really, because it's a turn-based RPG for the most part. Although I guess it does matter with some of the timing stuff, which we'll talk about in a second. But like the first thing that I did was like, whoa, fuck, it's like 20 frames a second. Like, let's put this on performance mode. I'm playing on PlayStation 5, by the way. Like, looks great. Runs great. The character models, I think, are a little stiff and the lighting doesn't look great on them. But I think it is saved by one, really good writing. Two, phenomenal music. And three, stellar voice performances. So far, I've just heard a lot from Charlie Cox because he's the main character. And like, you know, yeah, I think he's a great actor. I have not really watched much that he's been in, but you just made a face. Yo, what was that?
Like my brain, he's the Daredevil.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I'm like an idiot. Okay.
He's quite good in this game. And
can he see? Is he blind?
He is not blind. He can't see. He's missing
actor.
One arm though. He's got a like a robot arm.
Do you think Daredevil would rather have his vision or
a robot arm?
Yeah.
A robot arm. I don't know that much about Daredevil.
Well, he's blind.
So I don't know if he like, I knew that, but like this, but he like makes up for it, doesn't he? Kind of like, he's like really like sharp
with,
like hearing
with his riz.
See, you made a reference, but I don't, is he like a charmer?
No, I just, I've been using the term the youths use.
They are saying it. They are saying that a lot.
I'm just
by the way, a happy birthday, Rizzler. It was the Rizzler's birthday yesterday. So happy birthday to the Rizzler. But yeah, so Clair Obscur, it's a little stiff in its presentation with the character models, but I don't think it matters because the voice acting is good and the writing's good.
All right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, who cares?
In about 4 or 5 hours, what's the ratio of gameplay? Like, you are moving something with a stick or scrolling through a menu and cutscene.
I would say there's been about, I would say it's been about half, and I've gotten to the point where it has started to open up.
So there's more. Okay.
There's a lot of optional areas. There's a big, this fucking surprised me. There is a, what's it called? Like map screen where like you exit an area and then you're a big version of you. Like you're like a, you're like running across a giant map to get to the next area. Oh. And you're like interacting with things in the map. It's like old school, like
Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy used to do that. Yeah. Which I was like super charmed by. There's a lot of optional areas and a lot of like optional bosses that you can fight too around there, which I think is kind of cool. So it is turn-based RPG combat with a twist to it. There's sort of it's active time turn-based, and by that I mean when you select a an action, you can time your hits, like hitting the X button, it'll pop up as like a little quick time event, and if you hit it at the right time, you will deal extra damage, which I think is kind of cool. But then the other part about this, and I think this is where you might lose some people, is you can dodge and parry enemy attacks to obviously mitigate damage, and then also if you parry, you basically charge your like ATB meter, which we can talk about in a second. I don't necessarily think we need to go into like the exact specifics of how all that works, but like it's advantageous to parry because if you parry an attack, you get a charge for your like action points. And then also if you parry all of the attacks in an enemy's attack, which sometimes it's just one, but sometimes it's like three if it's like a combo, you will then perform a follow-up attack immediately and just take off a lot of health from an enemy. So for me, dodging has a bigger window of like damage mitigation, right? Cause you can just like dodge and it's just a bigger window, but parrying is what you really want to get good at, because if you do it enough, you are charging your action meter. And then also you are dealing additional damage. So I've been just like trying to parry and like get the timing down on all of that. That said, I think that is essential for playing the game. So like, if you're not into that, I think you might struggle with the combat, because like at a certain point, like just tanking the hits is going to be tough, you know? And I've had a handful of encounters where I'm like, oh, if I just tank these hits, I'm going to lose. So instead I have to like get good at this.
Is it like easy to get good, or would you say there's quite the challenge barrier?
I don't think it's like super, super punishing, but it is the sort of thing where like, I've gotten better with it as I've practiced, like really feeling out the sweet spot for like, okay, when an enemy attacks, like this is what I have to do. And also like the first time you encounter like a random enemy, it's probably going to rock you a little bit as you sort of start getting the timing down for its attacks. And then the next time you meet it, you're like, oh, okay, I've, you know, you're old news a little bit. I like it a lot. I think it works really well. It makes the combat really fluid and fast. The other thing is too, so you have these like action points that you get at the start of every battle, and like basic attacks will charge your action points, and then your like skills will deplete them. And each character sort of has like their own sort of way that they can interact with skills and stuff that's like very specialized. I think it's really, really cool. For example, like you have this like metallic arm, Lies of P style. And if you charge it up and you have like 10 action points, you can use like this like big lightning blast out of it, which is kind of cool. One of the other characters has like elemental spells, and when she does an elemental spell, it adds to this like sort of like slot on her weapon, and it's like just like in the UI. And then other spells, if you have one of those elemental slots already in there, it will draw from that and make that attack deal more damage. So you can start with like a fire attack and then you get the fire charge up there. And then if you use the lightning attack immediately afterwards, it's going to consume that light, that fire spell slot basically, and just buff your attack, which is kind of a cool sort of like system.
Do you have like a, like, I know there's probably unique elements of it. What RPG does this feel like to you?
I mean, with the parry dodge stuff, it feels a little bit like Paper Mario with that aspect of it. But then in terms of like the turn-based stuff, I don't know. It doesn't not feel like Final Fantasy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it feels like Final Fantasy, and like, it's, the combat is really, really solid. I like it a lot. It's flashy, it looks good, and it's like quick in and out. I'm really kind of digging it. And the exploration is pretty linear, but like, there are some side paths to find extra items, side bosses and stuff like that, weapons that you can slot in and out. It's pretty solid. I like it a lot, actually.
So overall, would you recommend this game?
Easily, because it's on Game Pass too.
Would you recommend this game to me?
I would recommend this game to you, Justin.
Oh, even if it wasn't on Game Pass, would you recommend it to me?
I would. I think this scratches the turn-based RPG stuff that I think you like. Mm-hmm. I think this is like 100% your sort of thing. And I think the setting is really unique. This like French inspired thing is really cool. Like I said, the music is really good. The combat's really great. The writing I really like. I like that the main character is, he's not like a coward, but he's kind of like, things go bad at the start and he kind of is just like, well, we might as well just give up. Like, sure, you know, and like it's kind of like, it's interesting and unique in a way that like, hey, a lot of other, you know, game protagonists and stuff are not about giving up, you know what I mean? They're like hopeful to a fault sometimes, but like he pretty much off the bat is like, you know what, I'm out. Like, this sucks. And you know, he gets motivation to keep going and whatever, but I would easily recommend this to you. And I would heartily recommend this to anyone who's interested in turn-based RPGs.
I mean, I'm currently actively playing South of Midnight, trying to get through it. Sounds reductive. I want to beat it.
To be finished with it, yes.
Yes, to be finished with it. So I can kind of move on to another game like this, because I think you said it was like a 30-hour to beat the main story, something the developer said, but...
That is the estimate I have been given.
Yeah. But knowing me,
I have to imagine it's more.
Yeah,
but
add 20 hours of me just looking up at the sky and being like, eh.
I mean, it is gorgeous art direction. So
why is it Claire Obscure,
brother? They sing it like there's like an opera singer. No, for real. There's like an opera singer in the soundtrack who's always like, Claire Obscure. I don't speak French, so I don't know what that means. Expedition 33 is like I said, they're the 33rd expedition, and most of them are 33. But I don't understand. I don't know what Claire Obscure means. I think you should have just called this Claire Obscure. I think that's a better game name than Full.
In French, Claire Obscure means light, dark, or light and shadow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a French term for chiaroscuro, an artistic mm-hmm. technique that uses strong contrast between light and dark to create a sense of volume and three-dimensionality in painting or drawing.
Well, that's kind of cool. Is there something like, what does éclair obscur mean?
Let me type that in. What does éclair
is that just like
obscur mean?
A pastry you can't see very well?
It's not standard French expression.
Okay.
It seems like a mix-up or creative twist on two separate words.
That's what Google told you? That's kind of cool.
Gotta love the AI, man.
Gotta love it, but also...
I know someone who like doesn't like AI, I'm like, when have you Googled something recently?
They're like,
I'm like, eh.
It's not very good. It told me that the inventor of the backflip was a guy named John Backflip. Which I guess I can't disprove, but doesn't sound right.
What?
You know what I mean? I have a screenshot of it. If you, I mean, like, I did do this.
I'm Let's looking. See,
it might be on my phone, but. Did that pop up for you?
I can't tell. Like, this is the whole media literacy thing, because now it's like John Backflip is coming up.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of AI sources from Reddit, and when people make jokes on Reddit,
it clearly seems like this. Yeah. Like, you know, like, it's
I will find this, like, screenshot for you at a later date.
The whole first page. How did John Backflip die?
Well, he went a little too hard.
Was,
you know what I mean?
Sir John's surname is used for the backflip because he himself performed the first ever record. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know the answer to this after Googling it for about 2 seconds.
It's I mean, see, this is the problem with AI a little bit, right? Where it's like, it does not have the ability to, like, discern anything.
Yeah. And it's just like the regular Google has, like, created confusion here.
Yeah. I think the screenshot is on my phone. I'm not able to find this on my computer, unfortunately, because I would love to show you that I'm not lying. But yes, there you go, Justin. That is Claire Obscura 33. I am going to be keeping up with this game. I'll update you as I play it a little bit more. Speaking, though, of games that I wouldn't recommend to you... I did finish Blueprints,
and
I see on the sheet here that you've played Blueprints.
Yeah, I beat it.
Did you fucking really?
No, I can't. I won't.
Okay. Yeah. I went from being like, this is a pretty good game, to being like, I think I really don't like this game.
And
that's partially my fault, but go on.
What I do like about the game is I think it's a pretty clear objective as to what you have to do. And I think the means to what you have to do makes sense. And I'm sure there's, like, some, like, deeper puzzles with it. But, like, it's pretty clear that you go through rooms to get certain upgrade parts that let you go into further down rooms. And you have to, like, manage that kind of, like, balance about, like, what resources do I need to farm from certain rooms.
Yes.
While also making sure I can proceed to the end. I get it.
Yes.
And a lot of those things that you get, whether it's a key or a gem or whatever, you have to solve mini puzzles in these rooms. And a lot of these mini puzzles, once you know what they are in the room, that's the mini puzzle for that room, correct?
Yep.
And then there's probably bigger overarching puzzles, a little bit more ambiguous.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
Overarching puzzles.
That are, like, kind of connecting everything in this other layer to make it even more complex, which none of this stuff to me is odd or problematic when I'm considering a puzzle game.
Yes.
But the thing that, like, we already know I have an issue with is that this game is way more roguelike than I want it to be.
Yes. This is the problem for me. So here's what happened for me.
Okay.
So the goal of the game, this is the puzzle roguelike, I guess you already said.
Blueprints.
Puzzle
roguelike.
Blueprints. On Xbox Game Pass, on PlayStation Plus. Available for all to enjoy. The goal is to get to the 46th room of the house. And to get into the 46th room, you need to get into the antechamber, which you can see on the floor plan. So you just have to get to the antechamber. And the first time you get there, you're like, oh, cool. That was pretty easy. And then you're like, oh, all the doors in the antechamber are locked. And then it becomes a puzzle of how do you unlock the doors in the antechamber? And I'm not going to spoil it if you're interested, but did you ever figure out that? Did you get that?
I mean,
how much of this thing did you play?
2 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Did you unlock any of the, okay.
No.
There are ways to, each of the doors in the antechamber requires different things to unlock. At a certain point, you figure out how to do them all. And my strategy was to focus on trying to do one, while keeping myself open to the other ones, because I'm like, why spread myself so thin? Let's just focus on one sort of thing here. And then when that doesn't work out, then you move on to the other ones. Once you get inside there, the door to the 46th room is also locked, and you are given a means to unlock it in the antechamber. But in order to do that, you have to figure out what to do with the item you're given in the antechamber. From there, you have to do some puzzling to unlock the door. And once you've unlocked the door, now you need to get to the antechamber and go through the door to the 46th room. That sounds pretty simple, right?
No.
Unlock the door. Unlock the antechamber. Unlock the door in the antechamber. However,
it doesn't also at a certain point, the steps come into play with that. And I know there's a lot of ways to like extend your steps, but when you have to keep like backtracking through these other rooms, I would assume eventually getting back to that antechamber might be complicated or no.
Well, if you want to increase your steps, you just have to redact it, redact it, redact it.
Okay. Yeah.
Or maybe you don't. Who knows? Maybe you get lucky. So here's the thing. Again, this is just like mechanical spoilers for how this game works a little bit. Once you have the item to unlock the door, or once you have the item from the antechamber that leads you to the place that unlocks the door in the antechamber, the door, your ability to get to that area does not require you to enter the antechamber anymore. Does that kind of make sense? Mm-hmm. Like you can just go straight to that area in order to unlock the door to the 46th room. But getting to that area is tricky. And then once you've unlocked that door, there's no guarantee that you're even going to make it into the antechamber based on the RNG of the game and based on the fact that to unlock any of the doors in the antechamber, it is challenging. So I had known exactly how to beat the game. And I was like, I like had a hunch like, hey, if I get here, I bet that's credits. And I was like, I just need to hit credits because I've had my fun with this game. Similar to how do you feel about South Midnight? Like I've had my fun. I'm just ready to be done. Move on. And so I figured all that out. And then I just kept for it was two sittings. So it was maybe 5 hours just doing run after run after run of having to get to the place to unlock the door and then hope and I pray that I get the right combination of rooms to unlock the antechamber. And I would get one room away every single time. And then it was a waste. And so it was like 30, 45 minutes of work just gone for 4 hours, 5 hours.
That's why this game
Elena comes home.
Is not.
Elena's out with her friend. She comes home. She goes, hey, how are you? And I go, I am vibrating with rage right now. She said, yeah, the vibes in here are rancid. And I was like, you would not believe the mood I'm in right now because of this game. I eventually did do it. And I will say this. I recognize that is the wrong way to play this game. The correct way to play is to have multiple threads that you're pulling on at once. So that when you discover like, ah, fuck, I can't get in the antechamber. I'm going to look into this thing instead. That's how you play the game. To further your knowledge. However, sometimes, Justin, I don't wear my glasses when I go outside. Do you know why? I've seen enough.
That's a good one. Write that down.
I have seen enough. I don't need to, like, you know what I mean? So, like, with this game, it's like, oh, well, you don't want to try and figure out what this means? Like, I don't.
Not really. I
want
to.
And it's not that I don't want to figure it out. It's that I know, based on some of the puzzles that I had to solve, that I looked up the solution and I was like, well, I was never going to fucking get that. here's just a general puzzle mechanic spoiler. The fuck are all these chess pieces about? You know what I mean? Have you noticed those?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've been writing them in my journal.
Wrote down every single one in my little journal. What color it was, what room it's in. I found a thing. I found a chess related thing. No clue how that interacts with those rooms. Am I supposed to play chess with those rooms? If that's the case, the RNG on that's going to be fucking insane. What are you talking? What? Excuse me? No idea how that works. But that's the thing. I was like, I'm not going to figure this out. I can't. I just want to be done. But it took me so long to just be done. I believe I have some ideas on how that all worked, right? But I'm also like, what's up with all those clocks? I found one thing to do with the clocks. I found one puzzle that's solved by knowing the time and knowing the date. But that certainly wasn't it, right? I mean, there's clocks in like every single room in that game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's up with that? I don't know. Don't know. Never. I will never learn, though.
So.
Please.
When you got to this room and credits started rolling.
Yeah.
Was there any sense of satisfaction or resolution that made you feel like I could be done with this, even knowing there was more to go?
I mean, there's just like the finality of like, I've reached the end of the main time with this game. You know what I mean? Like that was enough for me to be like, all right, I'm done. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I got a trophy. The only trophy I got in this stupid fucking game. and then that was kind of it. But finality wise, I mean, like the story is kind of ambiguous. There's like some stuff that you discover, but like, I never really, it's a story that is told through like newspaper clippings and notes and things like that. And like passports that I found, which is cool. But I just wasn't able to piece it together based on what I like kind of get an idea for like, hey, something happened here, but like, what exactly was it? You know? There is a thematic sort of cutscene that happens and I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. Okay. And then also you do get the whole premise of the game is you are trying to get into the 46 room because that is what is required of you to accept the inheritance of the manor. And you do get some resolution and follow up on that, but that's
can you imagine if a family member of yours passed away and they just leave you this like puzzle that you're doing the rest of your life?
Oh, that would be so sick. If they left me a house that was an escape room.
It was an RNG based puzzle.
I think it's different because like then, you know, you start to appreciate like, cause it's like in real life, that would be sick. Cause then it's just like, oh cool, I'm just chilling in the drawing room today. You know what I mean? Like what's going on here? You know, like that'd be kind of cool. But in the game, it's just like, what the fuck is this? What am I supposed to do here? Whatever.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, hey, why could I spin all the globes in the game? I'm sure that wasn't just a cute little detail. I'm sure that meant something, but like, what's up with that? You know? So I would recommend this if you're into like really obtuse puzzle games, but I'm into really obtuse puzzle games and this was a little much for me. I did finish it, but
I reached
my end of my time.
You said it's obtuse, but to be fair, it's like part of the reason why you were frustrated with it was because you were trying to just get to the end.
Yes. That's not the way to engage with this, but it is a way to engage with this. You know what I mean? Technically, if I were like really, really devoted to this game, I would have been able to spend some more time sort of dissecting some of those bigger puzzles and chasing some of those leads. But like, I just wasn't getting the RNG that I needed with like the proper rooms. Like there was one thing that I was like kind of interested in solving. You need like the boiler room, the laboratory, and the pump room. And I think you need all three of those to like solve some big puzzle. But actually, I know that you do, or you at least need the boiler room and the pump room. But I have no idea. Like, I was just never getting those two things together.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's the same problem I was having with getting to the answer chamber. I'm like, I need these two things in this run, but I just can't get them. So what do I do? You know?
Yeah.
And so. Like, okay, that I was trying to work on, but I just couldn't get that either, you know, and that was just like solely the RNG. So it'd be like, okay, like this run doesn't work on this account. It doesn't work on this account. It doesn't work on this account. Like, what am I supposed to do? That's it.
Okay.
So are you going to keep with it?
I'm not opposed to keep playing it. Like I haven't run into like a frustration wall yet, in which it's just kind of like, I have all these threads open. I don't know how to solve them. I don't know if I want to solve them. Like, I haven't gotten to that point. I'll mess around with it. It's a great game to put me to sleep.
Oh, I'm sure. I saw a lot of people saying that they were playing this with like their significant others and stuff. And I was like, I don't know how. Like, it seems a little too. Maybe playing with someone else.
Yeah,
would be
like
good.
One person's the journaler, one person's
journaler,
the sticker.
Yeah.
One holds the sticks, the other holds the pen.
That actually does sound alright.
Someone
so
else
I,
holds
I actually,
the
I
one
take
piece.
Back what I just said.
The one piece.
Are you watching One Piece now, Justin?
Yeah, I'm doing that on one screen.
Uh-huh.
Teaching on another screen, grad school on another screen, playing Blueprints on another screen.
Yeah, because it's a game that can be played passively, and you don't need. Yeah, you can.
I have really a lot of brains.
the thought of trying to do like multitask while playing this game is like insane.
Yeah, I have so many. I have so many brains that when Abby sees me, she's like, "Damn."
She's like, "I know exactly.
You have more brains than my dad's on the ground."
His brain's on the wall in there. Don't go in. What? Shut up.
Back to South of Midnight too for a quick second.
Yeah, please.
It's become a jump dash game, and you know how your boy loves that shit.
Is your shit.
I think the game is like pretty good with a lot of the stuff that it does. The story, it's like broken into these like seemingly random chapters that each one there's like a big bad in it, and you have to like go around and like stop the big bad and like basically fill these jars of worries that people have to like help unweave the badness that's happening in all these people or these creatures. And part of me at the beginning, the first couple chapters, is like all these are just random and they don't really connect to each other. But the narrative is kind of weaving itself together in a way that I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty strategic with it. And while I'm not necessarily into the narrative as much as I was when I first started playing it, I do think that it's doing a pretty good job of telling a story that is at least keeping my interest in the gameplay, and the exploration is enough to keep me interested. Even if this is not a game that's going to like create a bunch of replaying for me or anything like that, it's going to be kind of like a one and done story. A lot of the thing that keeps me interested is that I'm exploring the world. You get these little like fluffs that are your upgrade material. You either find them lying around with like these mini puzzles, or there's like a piece of tin that you have to knock with one of your powers to get some of the fluff with it. And they basically, once you get a certain enough, you get enough to upgrade one of your powers. And they're kind of giving you enough of those fluffs and enough of those upgrades to always be like, all right, I want this next upgrade to see what that does, and that upgrade to do that. Even if by the end of it, I'm pretty sure I'll have all the upgrades. It's not like you have specific like builds you can make or anything like that. Again, it's pretty straightforward. And if anything, it just makes combat easier. I think combat was a little bit tougher before I had all my special powers. Now I'm just like a cool wizard going through everything, destroying stuff. But a lot of good stuff. I think the music in the game is also very like stand out. Each boss kind of has its own music song that goes with that boss. They're a little bit descriptive in what they're talking about. Like, I wake up and I go to work, I put my hat on and I'm unhappy with my boss. See, like, it's kind of like a little bit like sometimes a little bit like on the nose with the songs, but it's still enough to keep me going. And if this game truly is going to be about 12 hours by the time I'm done with it, I think it's going to be the perfect length and something I've really enjoyed playing so far this year.
Well, that's cool. I'm interested in trying it out. I mean, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but like, I am at some point going to get Game Pass for this Oblivion remaster. Most likely. And this is, I think, the number one game I want to play other than Oblivion. Well, Avowed as well, but like, I want to play this based on what I've seen of it, and mostly based on how you've spoken about it, because you've just spoken so highly about it. You think you're getting towards the end, you said?
I'm on chapter 9 out of 14.
Out of 10? Out of 14, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
you're getting there.
Yeah, I think I'm the plot's getting to a climax, and I'm sure the last couple chapters will just be like, fight the big thing.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, and that's how, and like the final chapter is always like some cutscenes and then like the boss fight, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you want? That's cool. And so, like, go ahead.
Oh, no, keep going.
The jump dash of it is like, Is that for exploration or is that for combat?
Both? Exploration. Or? You have some of those in combat, and like some of your upgrades, you get like a second dash, or second dodge as you're kind of going through.
Yeah.
But the dash is basically a platformer, like a 3D platformer to a certain point. It's not like super, super open world, but there's like open areas or zones to make it at least a fun thing to explore and find other fluffs around. So it's keeping me hooked. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Justin, you want to talk about the news?
Let's do it.
Oh, Justin, the Switch.
Oh.
After announcing that the Switch 2 exists and giving us that look when, was that like April 2nd or so? And then Trump announced all those tariffs and stuff. If you remember, Nintendo said, actually, hold on, we're delaying pre-orders while we figure out what the fuck to do. So now they have explained what the fuck is going on. Pre-orders begin April 24th, which is, I think, Thursday, right? Yeah, the day after Hitbox Day this week. On Thursday, I assume that if you've been selected to pre-order it from filling out that form, you'll be notified. You think it's on that day, or is it the day before? Or is that just for retailers? It seems like for retailers?
It seems for retailers. I snapped a picture of this. My phone isn't dead yet. Different retailers have different times. I hope you like staying up till midnight if you plan on pre-ordering some of this stuff. Because a lot of these are going to be... I didn't snap a picture of it. A lot of them are going to be at like midnight on that day, with a couple of them being like 11 a.m. I think GameStop's 11 a.m. in store, but a lot of other places like Best Buy and such are going to be at 12 a.m. On the 24th. So I will be up on Wednesday, Tuesday night, tomorrow night. When's that?
No.
Wednesday night.
Wait, Wednesday night. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be up on Hitbox Day. Maybe, depending on the embargo. But I'll be up at midnight to try to get that, at least to get some pre-orders.
I am also going to give it a shot. I didn't know how I was going to pay for this. And then the government gave me a lot of money back for my tax return, which was extraordinarily unexpected.
I thought you were going to say YouTube.
Oh, fuck, and YouTube. Oh, yeah. So I got a little bit of, not a lot, but I got a little bit of tax return, which was surprising because usually I owe like $8,000, which was always fun. So since I have sort of unexpected a little bit of cash, and then yeah, from the YouTube, I forgot about YouTube. I am hoping for that Mario Kart World bundle. I think if I can't get that bundle, I think I'm going to wait. Should I wait?
I don't know. I mean, it's $30.
He's gonna be
like, I don't want to be that person. I understand $30
is a lot for me right now.
Right, I understand it's a lot of money. And I'm not saying this necessarily for you. I think this is one of those cases that you're gonna have to think about in your head. Is getting the Switch the day one going to be worth it? Because I would also suspect that this deal will continue to be a hot commodity moving forward.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, is like, for me, I'm only interested in getting Mario Kart kind of if I can get it for that $30 off, because that $30 is significant for me right now. And if I can save that much, then great, I'll take it. But if I can't, then I'm not going to pay $80 for Mario Kart, you know? So I think that is,
well, Peter, it's $79.99. It's not $80.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry. You're right. Yeah, that really does, you know, that does make a difference. I will say this, though. So the Switch 2 price is the same. $49.99. Sorry, excuse me. $449.99.
If it was $49.99, I'd get two.
It's easy, yeah.
Three, one for
and
Archie.
And then the Switch 2 with the Mario Kart, the new Mario Kart game, is $499.99. Those prices are unchanged. That said, they have increased the price of some things. Games are the same. So Mario Kart World is $80. Donkey Kong Bonanza is $70. But then they've increased the price of Joy-Cons by $15. They were $80, which even then was... No, they were $70, weren't they?
No, they were more.
Were they more? Okay. So they were... Then I guess they were $80. They were not always $80.
No. I think they did raise the... Well,
they certainly raised the price at some point.
I think
because they were not $80 their whole life. I think they were $70.
The new ones or the old ones?
The old one. I mean, originally.
Oh, okay.
They were $70. Now, for the Joy-Con 2s are $95. The strap is $14. The wheel set is $25. I imagine that is the wheel set for like Mario Kart, like the driving thing. No thanks. The camera, which I'm not gonna buy, is had a price increase as well. The standalone dock is $120. A lot of their stuff has just increased in price. The everything other than the games and the actual Switch 2 hardware itself has increased in price. I have to imagine that they wanted to increase the price of the hardware, and then was like, they were like, with the response that there has been to this, I think this is going to damage our brand.
I think to a certain degree. And I mean, I think with this market uncertainty, who's to say they're not going to put prices of things up later? I mean, right now 100%. We're on a pause, and for what, 90 days since he announced the pause, goodness only knows what that's going to bring and how it's going to affect things. I do know like China stuff is still being affected. And I'm sure a lot of these parts are made in China.
So Nintendo has two factories, factories. Some of them are in China. But from Trump's previous administration, they wisely opened another factory. I don't remember where. I believe it is still in East Asia.
Was it Vietnam or?
I think me.
Yes.
They opened a second one because they had worries about this sort of thing. I don't know if it was specifically because of Trump. I know it was during his first term. They opened it there. Again, I don't know if it's specifically because of him or they were just like, you know what, in the future, maybe we don't want to have something like this happen. You know what I mean? So I believe that that's how they are getting around some of that with the US and all that. But I'm going to try for this because I have the money, and because also I can sort of say like, hey, this is a work expense. You know what I mean? If I were not working in games, I do not believe I would buy this right now. And that's not to say anything about anyone who doesn't work in games who's buying this, but just like me and my life and like where I'm at financially, I do not think that I would buy this. I don't think they have given a strong enough lineup of games for me right now. We're still waiting on what they've got for like holiday lineup. I imagine they've got something big for that. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with all of this. I don't know.
Just to be clear, looking at the price differences, the pair of Joy-Cons went from being 90 to post-tariff 95. Looks like a lot of these things went up about $5 pre and post-tariff scare. So that would be the Pro Controller went up 5, Joy-Con pair went up 5, Charging Grip went up 5, Wheel went up 5, Camera went up 5, Joy-Con 2 strap went up $1. What a steal. The dock went up 10, carrying case went up 5, all-in-one carrying case went up 5, and the AC adapter went up 5 as well.
Gotcha. So I have to imagine that the Joy-Con 2s are just more, you said $90?
Yeah, isn't what they were 90 initially, and now they're 95.
Gotcha. So, but the Joy-Con ones, I believe, were 70 or something. That. So this is significant jump up.
I thought
in terms
they were expensive to begin with, and I would only buy them if there was the color I wanted, and or like when I got my neon green one. I loved that one until they all started drifting. Or I just got whatever was on sale was kind of how I dealt with that.
Me too.
So
I didn't get a ton of them just because I just didn't have. It was just one of those things where I'm like, I can actually deal with this a little bit.
And
more.
One of the reasons, one of the reasons why I bought my OLED was not because I needed it, but it was because I was like, I'm taking the
With the Joy-Cons.
Yeah, I'm taking the cost of my Joy-Cons off of this, so it doesn't feel as bad. Yes, but yeah,
no, 100%. I was a similar way. I'm like, well, this actually is also a new pair of Joy-Cons because those aren't needed and whatever. Did you see that people are trying to get like? There was like a hashtag that we're trying to get trending to make Nintendo Switch 2 Welcome Tour free.
Good luck. And
first of all, it'll never happen.
If it was free, two, I would never fucking play it anyway.
No, I'm like, do you guys want to play this? If it was Wii Sports, yeah, I get it. It's like a boring virtual pamphlet.
What game award is it most likely to be nominated for? Games for Impact?
Most useless. What are the game awards categories? Game awards categories. Probably best adaptation of like a boring textbook.
This should be a bonus episode. We do game award nominations, wrong answers only.
That's actually very funny. That's very, very funny. You think it's best audio design? I bet there's some like good, like,
oh yeah, some good sounds.
Yeah. Oh dear. When you Google game awards categories, trending gamer, and it's just Dr. Disrespect.
Still?
Well, I mean, it's just like whatever random images that Google has grabbed from. Mm. They don't even do the trending gamer anymore.
Is it his headshot?
I don't think
he has a headshot, but like
him looking menacing.
I wouldn't be shocked if he had a headshot. You know what I mean?
No. Justin, did you watch the Mario Kart Direct?
I did.
What did you think of it? I did not watch all of it. I had seen sort of the highlights of just like, oh yeah, this game looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think some of the takeaways from it, the jump, there's like a jump boost in the game that I think is going to kind of make traversal a little bit different. And like the jump boost was used for a couple things to like get on certain walls and get over certain obstacles. I think it makes sense that there is this kind of jump boost that you can use in the open world as you're exploring it. So I think that's a cool...
It's kind of cool.
A cool addition to the game race mechanics that haven't changed that much in quite some time. So I think that'll be mm-hmm. interesting to see how that kind of like changes the racing meta for it. The thing that was weird, there's a couple of weird things, and they all kind of through the open world. How you get costumes is a little weird to me. Basically, there's like these like pit stops or these gas stations where you can buy a burger and you eat a burger and you randomly might get a new costume for your character. I don't know if I like the idea of it being like a random thing or it's like something that you get by finding a place in the open world. Like, it seems like at least the one that they showed, the first like Toad stop was like pretty like obvious. It was like a gas station that you went over. But if it is something like you have to like get to a place that's hard to get an upgrade, I think that would be a cool way to extend the gameplay outside of the races, give you a reason to explore the world a little bit. But I don't know if that's what it is. I thought that's what it was going to be, but I don't think that's what it is. And the way they kind of set that up, I don't think it's going to suddenly be this like find around the world, all these like missing things. So a little disappointed with that, but I think the costumes look cool. And I think the cool thing about the costumes is that with how many characters, what are there, like 80?
It's a lot. It's a fuck ton.
I made that up. But like however many there are, they all have the same like costumes, but they're just different designs almost. So like the amount of like effort that goes into adding a new costume to these like games is going to be crazy, but kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's like, it's almost like a Smash level detail that you have to do. Whenever you add a new character, it's not just adding a new character, it's adding specific characters' animations to it, a new Kirby thing, a new, you know, like whatever you're doing with it. Like having that for the character models, I think is kind of a unique change. The open world itself seems still a little bit just open. They tout their like free roam mode where they have these like these switches that like open up these coins that you can get and like these little like specific kind of like mission things that you have. But none of the stuff I saw necessarily seemed to be like, all right, you find this a toad in the open world. It's like, all right, win a race on Rainbow Road. Like you don't have any like that kind of mission structure in the open world. So I do worry that the open world is going to be nothing more than just like a space between maps that have a few things that aren't worth doing in it. And that's what it kind of looks like to me.
That is my worry as well. Or it's like, I kind of like that Mario Kart was like, there were definitely like levels that were like on the highway, but like those were always like themed like crazy highway.
Yeah.
Whereas like, this is just like, it's just a highway in the desert. You know, at least that's what it has seemed like from some of these things. Obviously, like there's like different areas for different things, but do you know what I mean? A little bit, whereas it is, because it has to all be cohesive, it means that it can't be these like impossible sort of like areas. But I'm still open to seeing what's up with that. Because also, like, I know that they do have, like, the different segments of the different areas and stuff like that that I have to imagine they're going to add on to as they go, right?
Yeah, they alluded to the fact that when you do all the Grand Prix, you'll unlock Rainbow Road, which isn't on the traditional map. So I'm assuming there'll be, like, a place that pops up or a warp pipe or a star that takes you.
Yeah.
To other courses. And how easy would it be to just add another floating island for some new courses, for another, yes, Grand Prix?
100%.
Or another, like, just ocean area or something like that. Like, I think they can add to this pretty creatively. But I don't know if the open world is going to be just fun to, like, drive around in. I think it's going to be something. It'll be there. There'll be some stuff in it. But is it going to be fun to just fuck around? I don't think so.
Right. It really, really, really depends. Would you say... So,
yeah,
like that's how I feel about it. Yeah. Least.
But I still think, all that stuff aside, you could probably ignore most of that stuff. And I still think it's going to be a good game. I think the knockout mode looks a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Where it's like don't be last.
You have to get to the gate by a certain point. I think that mode's going to be kind of changing, life changing. They also, the Grand Prix, you have to get to the next map. I don't know if that's going to have to do with, like, positions, like where you end up, like, placed at the starting point. Yeah. If it's going to be something that, like, impacts the game, is it going to take too long, or is it going to be something that's actually fun to go from course to course and there's, like, a purpose and a reason for getting there quicker? So I don't know. I think there's a lot of, still surprisingly, a lot of what ifs after watching that. But I think the problem is with a lot of these what ifs, it's not like there's going to be all these new modes and features. I think it's going to be pretty much what we see. And the what ifs, yes, are going to be kind of like the disappointing, oh, it's just that.
To me, I think the what ifs, it's like the thing, the answer for the what ifs is, like, is it going to be fun to do those things?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is probably yes, because Nintendo usually makes the mundanity of stuff fun.
Yeah.
You think about, like, traversal in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, like, on paper maybe sounds not that fun, but, like, in reality it's a great time, you know what I mean? And like, they figured out how to make traversal fun, and that is the case for every Mario game, you know what I mean? Like, all of their games have that. I would be surprised if this game is like, yeah, I guess just like driving around an empty world. There's nothing to do, no way to interact with it, nothing fun to do. That would be extraordinarily surprising to me.
Yeah, I agree. But we'll see. I really hope it's the Breath of the Wild of Mario Kart. And I don't mean that to be reductive when I say that, but, like, I think the thing about Breath,
it's like,
of the
Wild, it's like a bigger, like, open-ended, like, let's see where it goes.
Yeah, and, like, there's always something to go for in Breath of the Wild. And I thought Breath of the Wild was amazing. And then you played Tears of the Kingdom, and it, like, goes higher with literally every single thing in that game.
Yeah.
There's more to do in every corner, more things to explore. You have the Underdark that is, like, this thing that they did do a good job of hiding that. So maybe there'll be an Underdark to this. Can you imagine? There's an Underdark.
Just show up and it's just like, yeah, yes, like, yeah, the depths, and just like, oh my gosh. Yes. 100%. I'm into this. But yeah, there you go. Justin, Oblivion.
Oh, my least favorite Elder Scrolls game that I've played.
Yeah, there you go. Since we last talked, there have been just like... this thing has been a bucket of water that's been shot with a machine gun. There are so many leaks, right? Finally...
You mean a shotgun to the knee? That's an arrow to the knee.
Hey!
Oh.
Well, shotgun to the knee happens in Last of Us, doesn't it?
Mixing my metaphors.
Bethesda Game Studios finally tweets out, tomorrow, 11 a.m. EST... they're going to be streaming the announcement. Rumor has it that this thing is shadow dropping tomorrow.
That'd be so fucking hot, man.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too. I think that the leaks surrounding it have been pretty good marketing for it. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, shadow dropping a big game like that is cool. And, like, that's, like, super sick. But, like, at the end of the day, like, just saying, like, hey, I think this might be happening. And then having, like, all this, like, speculation and, like, people, like, doing digging and stuff like that is like, kind of cool. I mean, if the shadow drops tomorrow, I got some weekend plans. You know what I mean? Clear my schedule.
I have some weekend plans. I'll be in Lake Geneva.
See, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You bring in your backbone to play some Oblivion.
Me and my backbone have become really tight friends. Let me tell you that right now.
Is that right? Real quick, can I say, I just scrolled down on this tweet, and the top comment here is the Dark Brotherhood note that you get when you've murdered an innocent person that just is the handprint that says, "We know." It's pretty good. It seems like this is a remaster and not a remake, so I'm going to be curious to see what kind of, how much remaster it is versus how much remake it is. From what we've heard, it sounds like it's a lot more remake than anything. But
I don't know. Let's ask Naughty Dog what they are, their opinion is.
I mean, like, that's the thing, is like, if it is a remaster, it's running the game underneath. But if it's a remake, it's not.
Does it matter what
Demon Souls? What's that?
Does it matter what we call it or what they call it? You know, like GIF and JIF.
You think that they would know?
But like,
you know what I mean? You think that like they would know?
Do you think they would know?
One would assume, but like I said, the Demon Souls remake is a remaster.
But
like, full stop, it is a remaster.
But didn't they redo the code?
It's running Demon Souls code underneath the whole thing.
Well, that sucks. That sucks, man.
So like all the exploitable glitches and stuff are still in that game, because like, it's just the same game. It's just got a fresh coat of paint. It's a good game, but I will play this. I will certainly play this.
I probably will.
I will unfortunately probably play this before I play Avowed.
Which is fine. That's up to you. I saw all the things in it, and I saw that how they said that Oblivion did it better, and that was before it was even remastered maked.
Yeah, that's very fair.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Justin, I think we're going to call it here. If you're interested in hearing our thoughts on The Last of Us Season 2, Episode 2, we're going to have a whole other episode in the feed that will be going up at the normal Hitbox time. I'm not sure when this is going up because I don't have the information right in front of me because of the Clair Obscur embargo, but that will certainly be up at the regular time. I'm just going to call it, right? Like, unless you have anything else to add about Oblivion or Mario Kart or anything.
Obliviate! I've made you forget everything you knew.
Stop. You violated the law. That's from Oblivion. We're going to call it there. You can go ahead and follow us on Blue Sky at Hitbox Pod. If you're interested, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. Rate this episode in your podcast player of choice if you so choose. Again, Blue Sky at Hitbox Pod. We're there. We're off Twitter. Good riddance. Goodbye, Twitter. I'm letting you sink to the bottom of the ocean. Am I missing anything, Justin?
No, you're beautiful.
You're beautiful. Let's talk about The Last of Us. We'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.